We thank the organizers for inviting me to give a talk here. It is a great opportunity for me. Actually, it's not exactly the first time that I talk in this Integrability Engaged and String Theory meeting. I remember 2 years ago in Potsdam during the conference dinner, someone claimed I was the youngest guy and I have to give a silly small speech. And, well, I said nonsense and people just forgave me, and now I'm here to give a more real talk. So I'm really happy to be in such a welcoming community, and I really want to, well, thank you for inviting me and giving me this opportunity to speak here. So in this talk, I will talk about the AGS-CFT Y system, which aims at solving the spectral problem. And basically, in the first part of the talk, I will, well, motivate our work, which is to appear soon in, it is a joint work with Nikolai Gromov, Vladimir Kazakov, and Dmitro Volin. And, well, so I will first motivate and explain what the spectral problem is. Then we will see that the Hirota equation can be solved in terms of a finite number of functions. So giving a finite number of nonlinear integral equations. And then we will see that this analysis led us to discover new symmetries in terms of T functions. And, well, I will talk a little bit about that. So first, about, well, this Y system and how the spectral problem is solved. Basically, the way all this is derived is by doing some double Vic rotation trick. I won't explain in details, but, well, one has to know that it is based on an analysis of long operators, which is continued by some analyticity continuation to short operators, and that basically that works only for the ground state. And the outcome of this double Vic rotation is some integral equation over some Y functions. So you get integral equations of the form one Y function is an infinite sum of kernels convoluted by logs of other Y functions. And you have extra source term for some specific nodes, some very specific Y functions. So basically, these Y functions are a function of three parameters, A, S, and U. A and S live on this lattice. Basically, at each circle on this lattice, there exists a Y function. And this function is a parameter of U, where U is, for the moment, a real parameter. And then it will become complex. So basically, already in this term, there is a square root, which leads to some cuts when you look at the analytic structure in the complex plane. And at the same time, these kernels are actually very complicated. So what you have from there is some so-called TBA equations. And it's basically complicated kernels. And an infinite set of nonlinear integral equations. Okay, now if you want to simplify a little bit these TBA equations, they can be mapped into a simpler equation. Yes, I forgot to say, okay. This derivation works for the ground state, and, well, there is an extra assumption that the same equations will hold for excited states by some analytic continuation. And for excited states, I mean, excited states correspond to different solutions of the same set of equations, but are characterized by extra zeros and poles, while the ground state doesn't have zeros and poles. And due to these zeros and poles, when you do the convolution, you have to choose the position of the contour with respect to zeros and poles, and that gives rise to extra source term in your TBA equation when you have excited states. So now, if you want to simplify these TBA equations, they actually imply a so-called Y system equation, so which is an equation of the form YAS plus YAS minus equals 1 plus YAS plus 1 1 plus y as minus 1. So I'm writing it here very schematically, and the exact statement is on the slide. So this was derived by Gromov, Kalaskov, and Vieira, actually before the exact TB equations. And, well, there is a notation, this plus here corresponds to the spectral parameter. So this system of equation looks much nicer. You just have ratio and a simpler algebra, just shifts of the spectral parameter. So it's a priori nicer. Now, and so basically it's TBA equations imply this. Now, if you want to go further, well, if you want already to anticipate on the further part of the talk, what we will be looking at is Hirota, because you will have a finite number of functions. So basically, this equation over y functions can be rewritten in terms of so-called t functions, which are obtained in terms of y. There is a change of variables between y and t functions, and you can rewrite it as now a bilinear equation on t functions. And what will happen is that this bilinear equation is much, much easier to solve. And in particular, it will give a parametrization in terms of a finite number of functions instead of this infinite set of nonlinear integral equations. So basically, this Y system is equivalent to the Hirota equation. And the Hirota equation is the statement here. Actually, the equivalence here becomes true only after you somehow quotient by some gauge transformation, which is namely the Hirota equation is invariant under this gauge transformation, and y functions are invariant under it. So what we have is, on the one hand, TBA equations with complicated kernels, and on the other hand, this y equation, which is quite simpler, and Hirota equation, which is, we will see that it is actually even simpler. But we only have an implication here. So if you want to make your set of equations complete and to really describe the solution of your spectral parameter, if you want to get some kind of equivalence here, you have to add here some extra information. So if you add extra information in addition to your Y system equations, you will get an equivalence. Actually, this extra information is some information about analyticity. Analyticity of the Y functions. And so in the case of Y functions, it was well understood and studied in this paper. Cavaglia, Fioraventini, Tateo in 2009. So this is in terms of Y functions. And if you want to look at the T functions, you should also have some analyticity requirement. And one of the aims of this talk is to understand these analyticity requirements in terms of T functions. So the one point will be to re-express the spectral parameter, the spectral problem, as Hirota equation plus some analyticity constraints on the T functions, and to understand what are these analyticity constraints to be put here. And then another point will be that Hirota, well, due to actually to Q functions, we will see that very soon, Hirota gives a finite set of equations. Whereas for TBA equations, you have an infinite set of nonlinear integral equations, and at the level of Y functions, you have an infinite number of Y functions. Yes, yes. Okay, the construction of T, at this level, T is just obtained by a change of variable from a Y function, and this Y function is a highly complicated object derived from some double Vick rotation trick, and the physical meaning is not completely clear. But there are some limits in which you can understand the physical meaning of these T functions.
You're answering the question. So, for which system? Just for clarity at this point, you have three variables, A, S, and U, but you're also on a lattice. So where does the lattice, right? There's a discrete variable A, S, and U is also being shifted, right?
Yes, and
in addition,
U...
You said it's defined on the lattice. So where's the lattice dependence in this?
What?
You said it was all defined on your lattice.
Yes.
But
so
we only see three specific variables, A, S,
okay.
U.
Okay. The lattice corresponds to the variable A and S. And U is, for TBA equations, it would be a real parameter. But then you analytically continue to a complex parameter.
Well,
but
A is just an integer lattice? Just integer
A and lattice? S are integers.
So you just have a pair of integers and some continuous variable. That's the only independent variables. And the Hirota equations are entire. You only have A, which is an integer, S, which is an integer, and U, which is some complex number, correct?
Yes.
And which only gets shifted by KI.
And actually, for U, it is a complex number, but you always have shift only by I over 2. So in some sense, it has some discrete features, but...
So, okay, it's a bilinear equation, so it looks very much like Hirota equations. But is it really a Hirota equation in the sense of integrable systems? But it describes a point in some Grassmannian? It's a So this can this be embedded in either the 2KP or the 2TOTA?
Okay, so so after this introductory part, so the first thing, the easier thing to understand is how Hirota is actually a finite set.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So if I understand correctly, you're saying that actually reformulating the Y system into Hirota equations is more advantageous because it has a finite set of equations, right?
Yes.
Since the equivalence between the Hirota equations and the Y system was known from the very beginning that the Y system was introduced into the study of finite size corrections, why was it preferred, let's say, for the study of finite size corrections up to recently?
Basically, Hirota equation is not enough. You need some extra stuff. And in the same manner, if you write the equation in terms of Y function, either you write this equation plus extra stuff, or you use the TBA equations. And basically, the extra information that you need is better understood for Y system equations. And I think, but as far as I know,
just a comment. In all limits where you can solve analytically, actually, what you solve is Hirota equation, and solution in terms of T function is much simpler than in Y functions. It was not ignored.
And it is written in your first papers, I think, on the subject. Yeah. Okay. So the point is, Hirota can be rewritten in terms of a finite number of functions, and these functions are exactly the Q functions. So very, very briefly, it is a known statement for some times that, okay, I forgot to say that in the introductory, sorry. Okay, not yet. So the Y system here, I forgot to say the shape of this Y, of this lattice. So this lattice, we will call it the T-hook. Well, it's just some jargon, but okay. And the shape of this lattice is tightly related to the symmetry of our theory. And basically, you can see that here you have two rows, four rows, and two rows. And, well, this can make us think of PSU 2.2/4. And there are some other theories for which we know the sigma, the lattice for the Y system, and it is related to the group symmetry. So, for instance, for SUN gross neveu, you get a lattice for the Y system, which is just an infinite strip, but infinite only in one direction, with n rows. And in general, the shape of your lattice for Y and T functions is highly related to your symmetry group. So to... yes, okay. So black and white dots are, when you have the TBA equations, you have a term here which contains the size of your operator and which is responsible for some asymptotics. This term is present only for the black dots. And these black dots actually enter into the computation of the energy. I mean, when you compute the energy in terms of Y functions, it is only the black Y functions that you will use. So they are in some sense more important than the other Y functions. But in order to find them, you have to solve the whole system and to identify all Y functions. So for Q functions, we can start with the simpler example of SUN. So in the case of SUN, where the shape of your lattice is simplest, it's the same as for a simple spin chain, then there exists a determinant expression for your T functions. So here, I wrote it for SU4, but, well, it's easily generalizable. The 4 here should become N, and, well. So you have a determinant. S appears as the shift of all Q functions. Q functions are shifted either by plus S or minus S. And there are 3 rows where the shift is plus S, and 3 corresponds to the index A. And you have the last row where you have a shift minus S. And the total size of your determinant is the rank of your group. So, well, I won't go much deeper into the details of the construction of this object and so on, but basically the existence of these Q operators and writing a determinant like this is roughly equivalent to Hirota equation. And, okay. So basically, when you want to solve Hirota for this lattice, for our T-hook, what you will have is that actually up to the diagonal here, in the upper part of your T-hook, this lattice is the same as the lattice here up to a rotation. So basically, the solution of Hirota here will be exactly the 4x4 determinant, which is on my slide. Okay. So when you construct Q functions, you have a big 2 to the n Q functions, basically, for a spin chain, and there are QQ relations. So basically, these Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4 are the same as, for instance, the Q functions that you constructed. Now, Q tilde, in your construction, Q tilde 2 would be, I think these Q tilde are related to Q functions, but Okay, if you had a different lattice where here the lattice was continued, then Q and Q tilde would be independent functions. If you change the lattice and you put some boundary here, Q and Q tilde are related. And it's, okay, I won't write down the explicit mapping to your Q function, but it exists. Yes, roughly speaking, it's complex conjugate. No, here not. No, no, no. Yes, it's equal, not conjugate, I think. I think Q tilde is Q up to a shift, not exactly Q, because you do not want it to be zero at S equals one, basically. So Q tilde is Q up to a shift. For this example, if the lattice is just like this for a spin chain, Q tilde is Q up to a shift. Now, if you take a lattice infinite in the opposite direction, Q tilde and Q are independent functions. Okay, what else did I want to say? Okay, so when you write your T-hook, we said for the upper bound, you have just this lattice is the same as this one. So you have here the 4x4 determinant, which was on the slide. In each of these directions, you will have 2x2 determinants. And I can write it down explicitly. You would have T1S equals Q1 shifted by plus S, Q2 shifted by plus S. Okay, here we will assume reality. So you will have Q1 bar shifted by minus S and minus Q2 bar shifted by minus S. Okay. And, well, basically the construction of these determinants for the whole T-hook was detailed in much more details in a paper by Nikolai Gromov, myself, Vladimir Kazakov, myself, and Zengo Tsubai. And basically what happens is that in order that Hirota is satisfied at the intersection of all these bounds, there arise some QQ relations, which actually could also be derived by other means, like your construction or what. Okay. So at the end of the day, what you get is that the T functions can be parameterized in terms of a finite number of Q functions. I will not enter here into more details, but, from that, you can hope to get a finite set of nonlinear integral equation, and in our paper to appear quite soon, this task is performed. So now the next interesting step, which has to be understood, is what analyticity condition you have to put on your T functions, so that you get a complete equation which describes your spectral problem. So the question is, what are the analyticity requirements to be put here? So basically, we studied some symmetries of our T functions based on the classical limit. So what is this classical limit? What we call classical limit is a limit in which the coupling goes to infinity, and it can be shown that the meaningful ratio, the meaningful quantity on which T functions depend is U over G. In other words, G is very large, and the spectral parameter U is as large as G, of the same order of magnitude. So as a consequence, when you hide the Hirota equation, well, I didn't write it on the blackboard, but you have some, as well as for the Y system, you have some shift plus minus. And what was denoted as Y plus, or T plus, let's say, so Hirota is an equation of the form T plus T minus equals TT plus TT, and well, there are some A plus 1, A minus 1, blah, blah, blah. And so the plus here means T of U plus I over 2. And now if U scales as G, which is large, then I over 2 here is completely insignificant, and you can neglect it. So as a consequence, in the classical limit, your Hirota equation becomes simpler. You forget about the shift plus and minus, and you get an equation which is known to be satisfied by characters. So basically, in the classical limit, this Hirota equation simply means that your T functions are characters of something. So this something can be identified to be the monotomy matrix of a superstring. And you have a character and with some labels AS. And these AS, which are the position on this lattice, actually correspond to Young tableau and to the representation on which you do the characters. Yes? It should be. I don't think it's known how to describe it as a spin chain, but it is very close to a spin chain. But it may be a complicated limit of some, I don't know. But as far as I know, it's not known how to write it as the limit of some spin chain or... excuse me. So for Young tableau, we restrict to rectangular Young tableau. So for rectangular Young tableau, you just have two labels, which are you take a Young tableau like this, and you take two labels, A and S, which describe the size of your rectangular Young tableau. Yes, sorry, I forgot to say that. Okay. Yes. So basically, in this classical limit, your T functions are just the character of something, which can teach us some things about this T function. We do not know exactly what is the underlying spin chain or the underlying something, but the interpretation in terms of characters already gives us some insight. And in particular, it helps us to understand what to put here as a gauge and what choice will be more physical. So basically, from the fact that it is related to representation theory, you know that for the representation theory, the representation here and there are somewhat equivalent, and their characters are the same, and as a consequence, you can choose, you assume that TA2 equals T2A. So basically, it will be the quantum generalization of the same identity for characters, and the same identity for characters is based on representation theory. Then, if you want, An extra thing that you can do, so basically here it's something like choosing the gauge. An extra thing is that some analyticity strips are known for Y function. Analyticity. In a gauge, which would have some physical meaning and would be interesting, the T functions should also have analyticity strips. So, well, it can be proven, and well, the outcome is that for a function like T1S, for instance, you have, if here you have the real axis, then there is a strip from plus IS over 2 to minus IS over 2. And inside this strip, the T function is analytic, which means it has no cut, no pole, no whatsoever. It is just analytic inside this strip. But outside this strip, you could have an infinite number of cuts, or you could have complicated things. Okay. These analyticity strips can actually be very well understood in terms of Q functions. And the correct language to understand analyticity strip is Q functions, as we will see in a few moments. So now you have some extra symmetry, which now really comes from the fact that you are not just a character of... you are not just the character of something which belongs to U224, but you have a bigger symmetry, and in particular, the monotropy matrix has determinant equal to 1, and your action is invariant under some Z4 transformation. So the point is that this extra symmetry will give some additional constraint on the T functions, which will give some extra requirement to be added to Hirota equation in order to completely describe the spectral problem. So you get one first symmetry, which is something coming from the Z4 symmetry. So let's explain a bit more what this Z4 symmetry means. So the Z4 symmetry is the statement that your monotropy matrix, in the classical limit, we say the T functions are the characters of a monotropy matrix. So there is a statement that this monotropy matrix is invariant under some automorphism. And this automorphism basically means that the set of eigenvalues is equal to the set of the inverse of eigenvalues. So if we try to understand that in terms of T functions, if you try to write a character, like, let's say, chi1s, for instance, it will be a Schur polynomial. And a Schur polynomial is something like, you will have sums over I and something like that. But you will have some, basically, lambda I to the S, something like that. And if you say that if you use the relation here, you can identify it. You can say that this will be equal to the same function where S is replaced by minus S. And this can be somehow identified to chi1 minus s with, some fancy hat here. What? This? Ah, yes, excuse me. Lambdas are the eigenvalues of the monotropy matrix. Sorry. Yeah. So you... Yes. Basically, these lambdas would be the eigenvalues of the group element in the fundamental representation. Eight.
Oh, they are usual numbers because yes. They appear in the classical limit where fermions are irrelevant. So all elements of Monodrian matrix are just usual bosonic fields.
Yes. Yes. Okay, the explicit expression, no, there is explicit expression. Here I wrote something completely schematic. But the explicit expression is in the paper, in the Gromov-Kazakov-Tsuboi paper, they wrote the explicit expression for these characters in terms of the eigenvalues of the matrix. The explicit expressions are known. Okay.
If you want, by definition, this is a solution of Hirota equation without shifts within this T-hook. This is a generalization of the usual Schur polynomials, the most natural one.
You mean you expand the superdeterminant of... Yes, so basically you could say that sum of chi 1 s zs is equal to superdet of 1 over 1 minus zg, and you can expand that. But it's a bit tricky because you have to know how to perform this expansion. So, well, but anyway, it is known, the exact expression for these characters. I say Schur polynomial for simplicity, but okay, the exact expression is in this paper. So the point is that you get a relation which, okay, at the level of characters, I had chi1s equals chi1 minus s. At the level of t functions, I have the same equation once you go to the full quantum case from the character limit. And I didn't yet explain what this hat means. It means that actually, it's not exactly chi1 minus s. It is some analytic continuation where you have this determinant, and you just change all shift plus s. You change it into a shift minus s. Here plus s, you change it into a shift minus s. Here minus s becomes plus s. And minus s becomes plus s. It doesn't exactly coincide with T1 minus S because actually we say that when you write determinant expressions for the T hook, you have a different determinant here and there. And if you just continue this determinant by changing the shift, you do not get the same as the other determinant here. But, well, more details will be found in the upcoming paper. So basically you have a new symmetry, which is this Z4 symmetry, and which is a statement that basically T1s equals T1 minus s hat, and actually there is a sign, I think. Ah, no, there is no. There is a sign, so my slide is wrong, so sorry about that. So you should not look at the slide, the sign. Well, the sign here is correct, not on the slide. So now, how can you use this new symmetry? Well, basically, okay, you have T1s, T1 minus s. The simplest case for this symmetry will be you take T1, 0 equals minus T1, 0. Actually, to make it true, you have to put hats everywhere, and we will see in the upcoming paper what that exactly means. But you get one T function, which is just zero. And having something equal to zero can be quite helpful. So basically, if you write this T1, zero, you know the determinant here, and you just change all shifts to zero. It is a non-trivial statement, but you can actually go to a gauge where this Q function is just equal to 1, and the Q function here is also equal to 1, And then the expression of T1, 0 is just something very simple, minus Q2 bar minus Q2. Just the determinant when the shift is 0. So if you write this, the consequence is that Q2 equals minus Q2 bar. Now, why is this relation very interesting? It is very interesting in terms of analyticity strip. I didn't detail a lot the analyticity strips of T functions, but basically the analyticity strips of T functions is related to analyticity strips for Q function. And for Q functions, you have the following analyticity strips. The function Q2 is analytic above the real axis. And below the real axis, it can have an infinite number of cuts. It can be completely ugly. So Q2 is a function analytic only on a half plane. Then the function Q2 bar, being its complex conjugated, is also analytic in a half plane, but now it's below the real axis. Now, if you say these two functions are equal, it will mean that all these cuts do not exist, and all these cuts do not exist. And as a consequence, by saying that Q2 is equal to Q2 bar, you get that it is a function with a single Zhukovsky cut. And this is a very, very strong statement. And actually, by performing this kind of analysis, you can understand analyticity properties for lots of T functions. So, well, you get that the function Q2 just has a single cut, and a consequence of that is that your T function, instead of having infinite number of cuts, just have two cuts, and is analytic everywhere else. So, when you know that you have a finite number of cuts, it's easy to parameterize your Q function as some resolvent. And actually, you have to add to your resolvent an asymptotic term, which comes from the asymptotic limit. But, well, so you can, from the fact that you know you have a single Zhukovsky cut, you get a description in terms of just one density, which is a density with finite support between minus 2g and plus 2g. Okay. And if I want to... Okay, so this kind of analysis can also be performed. Here I talked about the right strip. The same can be done for other parts of my T-hook, but I refer to the upcoming paper, and it will be there very soon, and to Dima's talk, I guess, quite soon too. Okay. Next, we also identified other symmetries. Some were known, and another new symmetry was due to the condition that determinant equals one. Here I had said that there would be something like Z4 symmetry and determinant equals one. And from determinant equals one, you get so also a new symmetry, which I will not talk much about. Okay, actually, it's the super determinant of the monotomy matrix. Okay. So, sorry for not having been so deep into the details. And, well, it should be very soon on archive. But basically, the content of this analysis is that you get a much better understanding of the analyticity property at the level of T functions and Hirota equation. Whereas previously it was better known for Y functions and also at the level of Q functions. Okay, we also identified new symmetry and we can formulate a finite set of nonlinear integral equations. Furthermore, which shows that somehow we choose some physical thing, we get a relation like the energy is the log derivative of a T function, which looks very much like spin change. We get exact Beto equations, which were kind of an assumption for this Y system. They can be expressed like as the requirement that our T functions have no pole. So basically what it means is when we talk about analyticity strips, usually for Y functions, they are not analyticity strip, they are meromorphicity strip. The Y functions are have zeros and poles everywhere. But our T functions do not have poles. They are really analytic inside these strips. Okay. But of course, lots still has to be done. And, well, this first coming paper is restricted to symmetric SL2 sector states, which is a subset of the whole possible states. It contains Konishi states, for instance. But, okay, there are lots of states for which this analysis is not performed. We have one Finley formulation. We have to check its numeric efficiency and see whether it can be improved and all that. And then it would be interesting to apply the same method to other Y system. Okay, like ABGM or I don't know. Another interesting point would be to understand the physical meaning of these T functions. And, well, at strand coupling, there should be some expectation value of a trace of a monotomy, but, okay, the relation to our construction is still to be identified. And at weak coupling, it's not clear how to interpret these T functions. And, well, all this means there's still a lot of work, really a lot, to be done. So, I'd like to thank you all for your attention. And to thank David for taking care of the screen a lot.
So you say you get a finite set of nonlinear integral equations at the end?
Yes.
In terms of the T functions?
It's not?
In terms of which functions, the T's, the Y's, which
is... Basically, you can parameterize the Q functions in terms of densities. Like, I wrote it for Q2. Here, there is one Q function which you can write in terms of just one density. And you get some equations for these densities. Or you can as well write equations for T functions and... Okay, which quantity you call the fundamental parameter of other quantity is a weird question. But basically, the interesting object is that we have some density to parameterize Q functions, and we try to identify them. Three densities. Yeah, it's because we have SL2 and because we are restricted to symmetric states. For non-symmetric states, we would expect four densities, I think. But it's still to be, okay.
For the whole thing, do you know?
For the whole thing, I would say four. But, I mean, okay.
I think the whole thing, Matthias, means 2.2/4, right? No, Kolya, Matthias is asking about fermions and SU2 and stuff like that.
Okay, so... there is an assumption in our work. Yes, five, it's five. In our work...
When you speak of two of them which are not useful.
Yeah. Basically... We restrict it to symmetric state, which simplifies the parameterization. But when you write a parameterization in terms of Q function, you are already using some part of the symmetries. And you do not expect to have eight densities or... Okay. So actually, as far as I remember, we expect five for non-symmetric states. Basically, you have one density for the right wing, one density for the left wing, and three densities for the upper wing. And in the case of symmetric states, the right and left density are equal. And for the upper wing, there is also a symmetry, which makes that instead of three densities, you have two densities for the upper wing. So basically, for symmetric states, we have three densities, which is two for the upper ring, one for the right ring. And for non-symmetric state, we expect five.
Well, there are many questions, but I'll try to make it just a small one. First of all, what is this function omega u whose character you're evaluating?
Well, it has an interpretation of classical monodromy matrix.
Oh, that's the monodromy?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't understand the notation. Okay. Then my other question is do you know what the branching structure is for these Q functions? Is it logarithmic? Is it algebraic? What?
The cut structure is just quadratic cuts, a square root.
Oh yeah.
The cut structure is only square root.
So these are all algebraic Riemann surfaces. You only have square root singularities and only a finite number of cuts.
No. I mean there are some quantities. For instance, this T0, it is periodic. What it means is that you will have an infinite number of cuts. And these, they have the same density for each cut. So it is still easy to parameterize in terms of one single density, but you do not have a finite number of cuts, but an infinite number of periodic cuts.
It's not an algebraic Riemann surface. Then.
Yeah.
Because the even if you had an infinite number of cuts, you could still have some kind of convergence where it goes to zero, where the density goes to zero. But if it's equal density, then it's certainly not algebraic. But you had a case where it is algebraic, right? Q2, the Riemann surface is algebraic because you're...
Yes, okay. Q2 is algebraic, whereas T0 is not in your sense. Yeah.
But the higher Qs do not have compact Riemann surfaces.
Okay, the higher Qs are more like periodic infinite cuts.
More questions? So if not, let me make two announcements, and then let's thank Sebastian. So first of all, don't forget, please register to the social events of next week. Otherwise, we might have them canceled. So please register for either the boat trip or the wine tasting, whichever you prefer. And in half an hour, we have a talk by Lionel Mazin on integrability and twister space. Okay, thank you. Let's thank Sebastian.